Mexican fans are something like really special. They're very passionate people. They're like really into the music. They sort of like, they have a very solid relationship with the artist. The food scene is great. The art culture, the art scene, the architecture, there's a ton of stuff happening.
Is it true that Mexico City is the quote streaming capital of the world?
But yes, heavy streaming in Mexico. And now we're also the third live music market in the world.
You guys are utilizing that to get smaller ticket prices. I mean, you're saying it out loud, right?
Welcome back to the What Podcast. This is going to be an unusual but very exciting episode for us. I'm super excited for this one. I'm Barry, of course. That's Russ. That's Brian. With us today is Ricardo Gomez. Tell me again your title, please, Ricardo.
My official title is events promoter at OCESA. I'm one of the promoters of the international events division, which basically just reduces to artists that speak English or sing in English. There's a lot of other divisions that take care of the local stuff, the Latin stuff, and special events that do theater and other types of shows. But for concerts in English, let's say, I'm one of the promoters in that division.
And we are going to speak specifically about the Corona Capital Festival in Mexico City next month, the 14th through the 16th. Is that right? 14th, 15th, 16th?
Correct.
Yeah. Pretty amazing lineup.
Thank you.
Let me just go ahead and give some quick highlights of that for people while we're talking about it. Foo Fighters, Chapel Roan, Linkin Park are your headliners. Brian, Russ, lots of acts on here that would appeal to all three of us for sure. From Vampire Weekend, Alabama Shakes, Queens of the Stone Age, Four Non Blonde,
alternative rock and rock acts that we always gravitate to on this show anyway.
Weezer, Monsters and Men, pretty cool, pretty great lineup.
Thank you, guys. Glad you like it.
Obviously, there's a lot of questions that I have, but let's just start with a couple of the obvious ones.
Okay.
And I'll try not to insult either of us with my naivete sometimes. But how was a festival in Mexico City the same as what we might see in the United States, and how is it different?
I mean, we like to I don't want to say steal ideas from other festivals, but we sort of like, we really,
that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, what we like to do every year, we send people out to festivals all over the world, actually, and you know, we pick up some of the ideas that they have that inspire us and help us create just like a better festival experience overall for the audience. We really like to like be in service of the experience of the people who pay a ticket and attend the festival. Obviously, every time we like the festival takes place, I see a bunch of people from the team and myself just like taking notes, and we take notes of things that could, you know, improve for the next years. And there's always room for improvement. And we have been doing this festival for 15 years now. So we've been doing the tweaks that we feel appropriate to, you know, get this festival and the experience of the audience to a different level. The curation is very similar to festivals like Lollapalooza or ACL. You know, I think that's sort of a constant that we're always paying attention to what festivals in the U.S. are doing in terms of their curation and their lineup, and see what they're booking. Just like, so we pay attention, we make sure we're paying attention to the right artists that really have something to say that could really resonate with the Mexican audience. So like, we get inspired from festivals all over the world that do things like that, you know? and to answer the other part of your question, like, how is it different? I would say that, you know, Mexican fans are something like really special. They're very passionate people. They're like really into the music. They sort of like, they have a very solid relationship with the artist emotionally. So like they, you know, it's palpable. The just like the energy and the passion that they have when an artist comes on stage and they start, you know, singing their favorite songs. I was just promoting the last couple of nights. We had the Lumineers here in Mexico City. And Wesley, one of the members of the band, who are finishing their tour here in Mexico City after doing some stadiums in the US, he was like, just like, this night was so special. These were probably the best fans of the whole tour. So I feel that a lot of artists really notice that, and every time they come to Mexico, there's this reciprocity between the fans and the artists that create a very special atmosphere and a very special set for you know, I'd say 90% of the bands who come and can experience that, you know.
Well, Ricardo, speaking to the Mexican fan, the music going festival fan, when I was looking to try to get to one of these Oasis concerts across the world, I was evaluating spots that I might want to go to, and I actually didn't really want as much to go to the United States shows. They're from the UK, so those dates are going to be a little bit more special. But I saw Mexico City and read up on it a little bit, and I thought, and I wondered, maybe you can't answer this, but is it some kind of soccer connection of fandom and the way they the excitement that America just doesn't quite get? I it just feels like those international audiences are not, it's not better, right, wrong, good or bad. It's just they seem to be a different kind of breed, and maybe it's just the passion you just mentioned.
I think so. Yeah, and it's a very interesting correlation, and it could be a really good metaphor for like to try to explain, you know, that passion,
because like the hooligan thing with the soccer, yeah. You know, everybody.
Yeah, you also see that in sports. There's like
the Poznan stuff where everybody bounces and all those kinds of things.
It's very emotional, you know. It's people get very emotional, and concerts are a lot more harmonious in the sense that it's not one team fighting the other, because that can get violent and aggressive. In music, it feels like a huge community and a huge, like, a moment to be together with people you don't even know. And it's like a very magical thing. And I think it does speak to the passion of, you know, Latin audiences in general, I think.
Talk about the curation of the lineup. Well, let me go back. What sort of, well, first of all, which other festivals are you looking at specifically? You mentioned ACL and what was it, Coachella?
Yeah, I had that same question. Like ones you've studied over the years. Is that what you're getting at, Barry?
Yeah, kinda, yeah.
Like,
Glastonbury. I mean, do you go all around the world, or is there specific places that you're more focused on? To steal
ideas, like we steal podcast ideas when we watch other podcasts.
We don't discriminate, really. If there's festivals happening in India that we feel could be interesting to go and check out, we do. Me personally, I haven't been, like, I go to the US. I sometimes go to festivals in Europe or South America. I think the farthest a person from the team has been to festivals outside is India, precisely. There's a very cool festival in Japan called Fuji Rock that I'm always, you know, I would love to go. I've never been, but I'm always, you know, on the lookout for what they're doing in terms of their curation and even the artwork that they have, which is like exquisite. I would love to be able to go there. I'm sure there's a lot to learn from Japanese people and the festival culture there. But, you know, I think it's just lack of time. If we could, we would go all over the world, you know, to go and experience what other countries are doing and other promoters are doing. I'd say mostly the US and South America, that, you know, the festival scene in these countries has been exploding for the last few years. So there's a lot they're doing. Colombia is doing great stuff too. Like, there's a festival in Bogota called Estéreo Picnic, which is beautiful. Like, they take care of the smallest detail. You can see how much effort and creativity and dedication is put into putting like that festival together.
What are some of the things that you we laugh and say steal, but I know it's borrow, but copy, mimic. Yeah. Is it everything from like security and crowd control to social media and you mentioned artwork? That's a kind of one of those things that most people who go to festivals regularly, like we do, that is a big part of it. That vibe that you can create, not just on site, but throughout the year with social media and website, everything.
Yeah, I think how people are consuming, like people who don't go to festivals, they're still consuming those festivals in some way through socials, right? So I've been noticing a lot of innovation on how festivals are doing their self-coverage of the festival on their socials, and how that's really capturing really special moments with fans. How, you know, for example, I was looking at earlier this year at the Lollapalooza coverage, and I saw how, you know, there was like this, like the community manager of the festival was at the entrance of the festival on day one, and just like fans were running towards the main stage just like to be able to get a good spot there and like literally not move for the whole day. And they were running, and the social community, like the community manager, was asking them like, "Who are you here to see?" And everybody was like screaming the name of the artist they were going to see. And I thought that was like a super special moment that sometimes goes unnoticed, and if people aren't like really putting the focus and the lens on that, again, the love and the passion of the fans who are attending. Which is what makes festivals so special, you know? We forget about that core and that very primal feeling, which basically is the one that drives our business, which is fans, like providing a platform for fans to connect with their artists. And I think looking at that through that lens and through that creative way of capturing that and putting that on social so that everyone in the world can see how special that is super cool. And I really love that. And you know, there's other things that sometimes I wouldn't go to a festival. One of my favorite festivals, for example, is Outside Lands. I think it's a magical venue.
In San Francisco, correct?
Yeah, in San Francisco. At the Golden Gate Park, beautiful festival. It's not like there's never going to be a festival that could recreate that just because of how beautiful their site is. But I don't go there and saying like, I'm gonna see how many security guards they have at the barricade. I don't go with like an agenda there. I just go there with an open mind and see, you know, what's cool that could maybe like, I don't see like the specific thing that they're doing, but I see like the core of what they're doing and try to replicate it and try to bring it to a festival like Corona and see how we could adapt some of those ideas to the Mexican audience and how would that translate. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But we're constantly, you know, trying to get the festival to a place where, you know, everybody has a great time and everybody has an amazing experience. And, you know, and it's complicated because you have an audience that's very wide and you have like people in their teens. And then with the lineups that we have people 50 years or older. We had Paul McCartney last year, so you had, you know, a very wide spectrum of people attending the festival, and you have to find ways to keep the festival interesting and attractive to fans with such a wide gap of age difference, you know?
Simple nuts and bolts question, because I haven't even seen like an aerial. How's the layout of the festival? A couple of main stages and then some smaller stages as well in a city center? Is that roughly it, or how is that logistically?
The site is the same site that is used for the Formula One race. So it's
a racetrack,
that's
right.
It's a racetrack. Yeah, it's a large sports complex with a stadium on one side, and then we build the festival complex on the opposite side. We do have two main stages that basically alternate. Then we have one like electronic tent and two smaller stages. And that's basically it. But there's, you know, the way the festival business model works best in Mexico is by having a lot of sponsors contributing that help subsidize the ticket prices. Otherwise, ticket prices would be really, really high. So a way we try to incorporate the sponsorships in the layout and find a way to just like they contribute somehow to the experience. We're just not putting a random photo op activation. We try to have them contribute to the experience. For example, a silent disco. So Pepsi will come in and have like a party with two competing DJs and everyone's wearing headphones. Mm-hmm. And people will choose which DJ they're dancing to, which makes a great experience and super fun. Other sponsors, for example, are like giving people the chance to get a tattoo on their arm with the set times so that they always have them handy. You know, it's like small stuff like that really, you know, contribute to the fans having a good experience.
Well, I saw you quoted somewhere, sorry I didn't write it down, talking about how, and you just mentioned it, that your pricing is at a far lower level than many of the big U.S. Festivals. And it sounds like you guys, Americans have this weird thing about if there's a sponsorship on something, it pisses them off for some reason. And those sponsorships pay for what you're doing.
Right.
So it sounds like you're leaning into that to subsidize, is the word I think you just used, the ticket pricing. And maybe that is just an odd American thing, and the culture in Mexico doesn't mind that, but you guys are utilizing that to get smaller ticket prices. I mean, you're saying it out loud, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a way we can, you know, protect that the ticket price, but at the same time, we've been doing this for so long that people are already like they already know what they're going to, and we worked very, very hard for the festival not to feel like a supermarket, you know, and people like bombarding brands at you. It's made in a way, or at least we try to make it in a way where it feels organic in some ways, and again that the brands and the sponsors are contributing to you know, how fans, you know, contributing that fans have a great time at the festival.
Well, the explosion of pricing right now, people act like they care about things, but what they really care about is an affordable ticket price.
Yeah.
However you can do that, I commend you for doing it. And you need to lean into Corona. You know, I like that a lot. I thank you for clearing that up.
Of course.
The diversity of the lineup, and the fact you mentioned you have teenagers and, you know, people my age and older. You have, we call them sort of legacy acts. I think you're maybe a little older. How did that evolve with the festival, or has it always been that way? Because we hear a lot, it works sometimes, but then you can get complaints of it's too diverse, you know. It's I want it focused. I want it just EDM, or I want it just this or that.
it's challenging. I think it's a great challenge because I think the core audience of this specific festival really likes like guitar based music. They like rock, alternative rock, and they're always expecting that, and they're expecting the big names in this specific genre. And sometimes when we've tried to open up a little bit, we do feel some resistance. But I feel we have to do it. Otherwise, we're never going to be able to make that shift in generation and, you know, bring over younger audiences and fans. So I think that diversity is a, like our way to just like try to slowly find the new artists, the new names in music, just to like be exposed to our core audience, which I in maybe 10 years is going to be so like completely different. But it's tricky because we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that and alienate our core audience. We really want to first give them what they want to hear, and also throw in a new like stuff that is fresher, newer, maybe a different sound. And it's also like a great challenge for you know, these people who have always said like they're very open-minded and very like pro art and pro you know, just like new sounds and new propositions from a cultural standpoint, it's not always a success. It's not always like we put this artist and it you know, it was a platform that it that Corona promised to be, and also we've in the past like agents which we deal with all the time also try to push some ideas. Sometimes we give, sometimes we like we're a little bit more you know, stubborn in the sense that we know what works at the festival and we know what doesn't, but we've learned that the hard way by experimenting and trying to put the things there that in the end didn't work at all, you know. So it's never like a perfect lineup, but there's always we're always pushing the bar a little bit to see what works and what doesn't. And if something works, then we will probably build on that for the following years, you know?
Well, your country is clearly a destination for countless people and interest because of all the weather and your locations and your beautiful history and everything. And so much these days, the My Morning Jackets, Widespread Panics, Fish, they do destination weekends.
Yeah.
In different areas throughout the entire country. Mexico City, I think Jason Isbell had one not long ago or coming up. But I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong, that is an idea, a destination for Americans to travel to more specifically, it feels like to me. Is this festival designed for equal parts locals and as a destination travel plan for people over a year, or what are your demographic pie chart, I guess, from locals to people who travel there?
I'd say it's 90% Mexican.
Really?
10% or maybe 15% in a very generous year.
So you have a very big appetite in Mexico City and the sprawling areas outside of Mexico City for festivals. They crave it.
Yeah. I think like nationally it's really high. There's people coming from all over the country, but mostly they're coming from Mexico. We do have some fans coming from the US, some fans coming from Canada, and like probably the wide majority are coming from South America. Places like Guatemala, Costa Rica, Colombia, a lot of fans coming from those countries. But we like maybe there's an opportunity there, and an opportunity for fans like to market to fans in the US that really like this kind of music, to come to the festival and, you know, present this as destination festival, which I think makes a lot of sense because of the boom that Mexico City is having. Not only in the music scene, but also like the food scene is great, the art culture, the art scene, the architecture. There's a ton of stuff happening all year long that makes it very attractive for people from the US and Europe as well. So I think there's a chance to grow in that sense.
Are you guys concerned at all with your lineup that it looks like anybody else's lineup? Does that even enter your, because of what you just said, it sounds like it's a, you know, Mexico City specific and Mexico.
Yeah, we've got a problem with copying a lot of festival, like speaking of copying and stealing. America right now is just flip-flopping one artist to the next from one festival to the next. And it's been a little bit of an issue with regular festival goers. But do you concern yourself with what other festivals are doing? In the year that you're trying to book, I mean.
Not really. Like we're not trying to differentiate ourselves from, like in the lineup sense, from maybe a festival that's happening in Japan or in Europe. If we have the same names as they do, many times it has to do with the fact that there's not a lot of artists, touring that makes sense for this city in this specific time frame. We know that we're probably not going to be selling people in Japan a ticket for our festival. So as long as it works for Mexico City and it resonates in some way with the Mexican audience, I think that's the sweet spot for us. We don't really try to be like just globally have the best lineup, because we know names are limited, headliners are limited, and many festivals every year will end up with very similar names.
And you're not really competing with other festivals.
Exactly.
It's like I can go see this lineup at Bonnaroo or New York or San Francisco. But with you guys, it's not always right,
but my perception of the last 10 years is that the international festivals in Latin America and even like in Spain, there was one called Mad Cool Festival, and there's these other, they seem to get the biggest and best names and very independent booking. And I know a lot of these are across the world from each other, and it's like, why can't we do that here in America? And I guess it's just because we're just swapping the same bands around. But your lineups from 2010, 11 on are really impressive. So you've gotten the best of the best no matter what America was doing. So that's not really a question. That's just a congratulations on the work you guys have done.
Yeah, thank you. But it also luck takes a big part, you know. Yeah. It's tough. It's not always an easy process, you know. It's not like everybody wants to play Corona. We do have to go out and shop for especially headliners, and it's not always that easy to come about. But there's also another factor that comes in, which is so many of these names are now able to, like, the top lines of festivals, they can come to Mexico City and do their own stadium shows and, you know, make more money than by playing a festival.
Yeah, we got that problem here too.
So, yeah, exactly. So there's only a few names that can really, you know, come and do these festivals. And sometimes it's not even a matter of if the festival wants them. It's a matter of what artist is available and what big artists can come and are willing to, like, play a festival. Because last time they already did, like, the stadium show. Maybe it did well, maybe it didn't do as well. But now this time with a new cycle, a new record, a new show and production, they want to try it out at a festival. So the stars have to align for that to happen. And we've been very lucky in the last few years.
Is it trying to book a festival in Mexico City, does that make it easier or harder? I'm thinking things like you just said, timing, logistics, routing. I mean, are you finding that some of these tours are they end because it's in November and it works out timing wise that way, or
yes,
yeah,
yes, it has worked out. In the beginning of the festival history, the festival took place in October, and we routed with ACL very nicely. But then we had the worst storm and rain festival has ever had in this country. So we pushed the festival to November, which is like safer in terms of like weather. A drier month. But the first couple of years when we did that, the artists and agencies didn't plan on that. So it was very, very tough to get those names because a lot of the tours were ending on October and they couldn't extend another month and come to Corona in November. So it's very tough to position that like a new festival in that way. So you have to be very, very mindful of the timing of just like the touring cycle of most bands throughout the year. But now with, you know, it's been like 10 years that we've been doing it in November, artists know the festival is taking place in November. So if an artist has a target to come to Mexico City for Corona in November, they will already be like routing their tours beforehand to make that stop here in Mexico City. So in terms of routing, I think we're past that challenge, but now the real challenge is the economics, because now it's getting more and more expensive for artists to fly to Mexico City, because, you know, when they're touring the US, they do it on a bus, they have a routing that makes sense, they're prorating all their costs among, you know, the whole tour, the whole, like, I don't know, 20, 50 cities, whatever. But for Mexico City, they have to fly in, and some of these artists carry a lot of production with them, so it's just super expensive for them to travel that way. And like now I've been getting into conversations with artists where they confirm at a certain amount, and then months later, like a couple of weeks before the festival, they come back knocking on my door saying, hey, guess what, we didn't budget accordingly, and now it's going to be like this much more expensive for these artists to bring the show. So could you give me more money? And I'm like, those conversations are really tough.
Or we just had a number one hit. So now,
hand it over. You know how it goes.
Simple question, Ricardo. I'm not asking about tickets sold. I'm just asking about capacity. What kind of amount of people are you trying to put in, or can you put into this venue?
It's a very big venue where multiple festivals take place. Corona is usually capped at like 85,000, but we have other festivals that have like take place in this same site, and they can sell up to 110,000 tickets per day. So
wow,
I think that's the limit. But for Corona, we like to keep people, you know, like the services we provide to people at like certain, you know, standards, and that people don't make huge lines for restrooms, for a drink, for food, or whatever. So we try to cap that to 85, which is still substantial, you know.
Oh yeah.
You do other things besides this particular event. What you mentioned the cost. What other challenges or changes have you seen over the years in the industry?
Good question. I feel like lately I have friends who are artists, and they struggle a lot with mental health and with like, you know, a life balance. Really, sometimes I think they're exposed in a way in which they weren't exposed before social media, and now they can read whatever people are saying about them, and I think that really, you know, plays against their, you know, their self-confidence and their self-love, and it sort of like many artists, because they're humans, obviously they have self-doubts about you know what they're trying to say, because they're exposed to a lot of hate, racism, whatever. You can, I mean, just like the speech that they're exposed to on social media, can be dangerous to them. That thing, and also like what's happening with Spotify, for example, which I don't want to say Spotify is perfect, right? But at least I think Spotify has been a great platform to get artists that wouldn't have otherwise been heard by thousands or millions of people without a label. And that's obviously helped not only the recorded music industry, but the live music industry as well. And sometimes I feel there's a lot of nuances to whatever the contracts the major labels have with Spotify. But I do see like people making a living from Spotify. There's a lot of critique on you know, that business model. But it's like, if we try to get our minds around solutions, like the recorded music industry was going down the drain before Spotify came to the picture. You know, people were using peer-to-peer downloading. There was a lot of piracy. Nobody was paying for music. And this way, I think, is helping a lot of artists. And the industry overall, the music industry, has grown substantially because of that. So I don't think we should be pointing the finger at Spotify. We should be like rethinking our relationship with what the new business model is like, you know? So I think that challenge is coming from ourselves and our mindset. I don't know if that answered your question. Mm-hmm. But,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It got me somewhere else here real quick, because I did jot this down earlier, and I only know talent buying and promotion of festivals from a peripheral view. I mean, I'm around it. I kind of have a basic idea, but the idea is where your music is selling. If it's selling in, or being listened to or streamed, I mean, you start there, and as to who you want to bring. Is it true that Mexico City is the quote streaming capital of the world? Now, I don't know who, I think it was Grammys.com I saw this. Maybe they're not the streaming capital of the world, because that's a pretty broad statement, but is there more streaming coming out of your city than the rest of the world? Is that true, or even close to it?
I don't have the exact data on that,
is it really high?
Yeah, I can tell you that many artists come like looking for opportunities to come to Mexico. A lot of them are saying Mexico is our top streaming market, and it's like, it's very common to have Mexico City on your top streaming markets, you know?
Yeah,
it's
shocked when I saw that. I don't know why. I just was.
Yeah, and it's not only Spotify, it's like also YouTube. Like, there's a lot of music consumption on YouTube. So I mean, I think that's a great indication of, you know, just like people being hungry for music and for culture in general. But you know, it's interesting to have those conversations because streaming doesn't always translate to ticket sales. Right. Streaming can be, you know, editorial placements in a big streaming market, so that will drive your streaming from Mexico City really, really high, but it doesn't mean that people are actively looking for your name and looking for your music. It's just like more of a casual listener. But if you cross the data from Spotify and from your other socials and YouTube and radio and, you know, all those, when something really feels like it's happening, you will notice. And it's not only streaming that will be the indicator of that. But yes, heavy streaming in Mexico. And now we're also the third live music market in the world.
So you talked about Spotify being, sorry, Barry, real quickly, the Spotify being, you know, maybe it's better to take a reevaluation of its purpose and how it helps the industry when people want to say that it doesn't. Well, I'd say Live Nation is that exact same kind of discussion point, and we do that on this show a lot. And we don't need to do that now, but Live Nation is 51% as of a few years ago of your organization, OCESA. Sorry, I don't know how to say that exactly. Is that true? And if so, anything that notable, did it better, worse, or things just kept moving along with more capital? Money.
No, we've been close partners with Live Nation since before the merger, and now they do have a controlling stake in OCESA. That's
OCESA. Right, that's what it is.
Yeah. But it's only change that I've seen from my standpoint and from what I do on a day to day basis is that it has opened up wide number of communication channels. So before it was like this sort of like very narrow, there was a gatekeeper that would send shows to Mexico from the global tours from that Live Nation put together. And now there's like a highway of communication and emails. We talk to promoters in Canada. We talk to promoters in Los Angeles. We talk to promoters in South America, because now with the acquisition, everything sort of like opened up, and I think that has translated to us having record years in terms of show counts and ticket sales in the last 3 consecutive years.
Does the festival want to maybe attract more people from outside of Mexico City, or is it you're okay with the way it is?
Absolutely. Like we would love to have people from all over the world come and experience the festival, not only the festival, but also the city. I think the city has a ton of things to offer, and living that and have the festival be an excuse to come to Mexico City, it's like a dream to us. We see that happening in the Formula One. You know, that weekend, a lot of people from all over the world come to Mexico, and it feels like the city, the streets. You feel so special to be able to host a show of that. An event of that level, and we would love to have Corona also be like a very international magnet of people that want to come.
We probably should have started this, or I should have from my notes here. You're a Berklee College of Music guy, is that right?
Yeah.
Is there music administration there, or were you wanting to be a rock star? It didn't work out, so you got into festivals like so many stories we've heard of a million times. That kind of is one of mine too.
It's a funny story. I'm a drummer. I used to play the drums when I was younger. That's why I went to Berklee. I fell in love with music when I was very, very young, and I remember before going to college, I used to have like a cover band, and I was the one who was sort of like managing the band and putting together rehearsals and promoting shows and you know, taking care of everything for like everything that needed to happen for
the
us to be
stuff that the slacker bass player didn't want to do, right?
Exactly. So I remember like telling myself after every show that I used to play with that band when I was like a kid, that I would never do that again, because it was a nightmare for me just to be playing, rehearsing, but also taking care of, you know, merch selling or, you know, settling with the venue or whatever. But I always loved it and always came back and did it again because I loved it. So when I went to Berklee, I studied two majors. One was music production and the other one was music business.
Okay. So they do have programs like that then.
Yeah, they do. And right after I came back to Mexico City, after I graduated, I landed a job at OCESA. I was obviously like you know, the assistant of the assistant, but I worked my way up, and I'm still here now 14 years later.
I guess one thing real quick, you said that, Ricardo, you take care of the English-speaking of music, of department, for lack of a better way of putting it. I read, and I thought the wording was weird, that since 2013, local and Spanish-speaking performers for this festival were banned? That seemed like a weird word, banned. But is there any kind of what is the philosophy on that?
Sorry, can you tell me where did that word come
from? I'm so sorry. I was jotting down on my notepad. No. Maybe I got some garbage from Reddit.
No,
if I did, I apologize.
It might have came up, but no, that's definitely not the right way to describe it.
I didn't think so. That's why I wanted to ask more than anything, because it seems like that wouldn't be the best approach. But what do I know? I'm not in Mexico City. So you do have Spanish, potentially, music.
No,
of course. If it works out. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. And that's basically the reason we sort of like decided to stick to the international lane, was because there's so many other festivals that take place in Mexico City, you know, that have a very wide offering in terms of genre. We sort of like, we have to create an identity for each festival, and there's going to be a festival that, you know, has a Latin rock core and DNA, and there's going to be a festival that has an Latin urban and local like reggaeton sort of like DNA to it, and then there's also another like regional Mexican festival. So each one has its niche. They're big niches, but Every festival like is speaking and trying to say something and try to be a platform for a very specific type of artist. And for us, Corona is that platform for international artists.
Sure.
So,
and I apologize for getting that terminology wrong, but at the same time I read that, I also read about the Mexico City being the streaming of the world. I'm like, this is crazy. All this stuff doesn't make sense to me. I'll ask Ricardo about it. So
yeah,
I apologize
for
getting that one
wrong.
Oh,
it's all good. It's all good. All right. No worries.
All right, Ricardo, man, thank you so much for your time.
And you guys still want to push some tickets here. You're on your way to, I mean, we're a month out, right? So where do you want people? I mean, the websites and all those things that we'll throw up on the screen too. But
yeah, thank you. Thank you. We're 1 month out for like a very special weekend in Mexico City with the Foo Fighters, Queens of the Stone Age, Chapel Roan, Vampire
Weekend. My girl Chapel.
Chapel.
I'm a big fan.
And Linkin Park and Deftones. So it's going to be very, very special. Tickets are still available at ticketmaster.com.mx. And hopefully some of your listeners can be motivated to come down here and leave the festival.
I know I want to get to Mexico City.
Always welcome here.
Yeah.
I keep looking at the lineup. It's interesting. You've got like TV on the Radios at the bottom. They would have been headliners on some others, and Grizzly Bear. I mean, it's really interesting.
The billing element of festivals has gotten very, very complicated. So we decided we're going to have just one policy, which is main stage headliner in line one, then the rest of the headliners on the second and third line, and then
everything else
that
the same
alphabetical order. Yeah,
same size font. I saw that at first, and I kind of caught on to that because I saw Jelly Roll.
Yeah.
And I was like, Jelly Roll's at the top of where we're from in the Southeast. Jelly Roll is the top thing going. So, congratulations, too, on such a well-put-together,
really
curated
really
musical
good.
Festival. Really is good.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so that was a lot of fun. A couple of quick things. First of all, I wanted to say it's the first time in a couple of weeks that we aren't talking about bluegrass.
Yeah, especially you and me, Barry, or me, or some combination of the three of us.
I don't want anybody to say we don't talk about bluegrass on this show.
Yeah. And they were, and you know, and we joke about that, but yeah, they were all three great events. That we, yeah. You know, they were most local, closer to us, a couple of them, but they've got a good thing going down there in Mexico City that I had heard of. I knew there was a Corona something, you know, in Mexico City, but I didn't know what it was.
Yeah. Wasn't that interesting, though? I was really curious as to how things were similar and how they were dissimilar, and not as you might expect, not that dissimilar, except for the advertising. Your catch about the Mexico City being such a great streaming.
Yeah.
What do you
I was
call
shocked
it?
By streaming capital of the world. As
capital
said.
Of the world.
So
yeah,
it's got some of the most streaming in the world. Is in Mexico City and maybe the entire country for that matter. But I was shocked a little bit because, well, after I was trying to just figure out as I read a couple of these things, was that it's not really a destination. They're not trying to get Americans there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I thought that they would take every single, and when I say local, I did mean the whole country, and
right.
I didn't clarify that well enough. Not just Mexico City. I was pretty surprised to know how many people in that culture really, really are excited about that kind of stuff, and they don't need rich people from America. Now they want rich people from America, so come on down, but they don't need them.
Yeah, that was interesting, but that was really cool. Interesting too, the changes in the industry. That he went right to the mental health. Something we noted on here.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of our musical guests that we've had are either writing about or they've had their own mental struggles or someone in the band. So,
you know, and he said something too that we didn't. It just kind of clicked in, and we just continue to move along. Is that the amount of, I'll just say the word abuse, but just negativity anyway, that these bands and band members get sent their way through socials.
Yeah.
Right? Like that is deterioration of mental, you know, I got to do this. I got to work so hard. I got to travel. I got to do all things. And I'm getting told I'm the biggest bleep in the world
right. Every
day. Like I had never really thought of it from that angle. I thought of it more of a, I'm having trouble in my personal life. Like I'm more conditioned to, I know what that's like. Not on their scale, but
you know,
get beat up online all day long, it can really ruin your day.
Nobody likes that. We get a little of that here, you know. I try to ignore it, but nobody wants to, you know, as I've always said, nobody wants to be told their kid has big ears.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of can get to you after a while. So that was interesting. So anyway, it was a fascinating conversation, and I'm really glad we did it and put it on the list. Another place, man, I'd like to go.
I am so obsessed with Mayan ruins and all of the ancient areas of the entire country. I want to go bad. Before we get out of here, though, I got to say there's one thing from K-Fest. We've spent plenty of time on that. It was a great time. Everybody knows that. But a first happened this weekend. The past K-Fest weekend. I got to a festival the exact same time Taco did. We got there the exact same time, so that's a first in itself. And the other first is I stayed longer than Taco did.
Wow,
he left before I did by about 2 hours.
Wow,
maybe hour and a half.
We need to make a note.
Look at that, the guy who never stays, always is late.
That's funny.
It's a first for everything.
Boy, you guys had good weather, didn't you?
Whew. Beautiful,
the best,
man.
The best weather.
Yeah.
Beautiful, cold at night, but fires and proper packing didn't matter. It was a great time. Good stuff at K-Fest for sure.
All right, as far as the future, don't know what it holds. We've got a lot of things happening in our personal lives, I guess. Russ will be moving in the next several weeks. He's got a lot of plates up in the air. I don't know.
Yeah, it's already begun.
Yeah, and I think we
and all
feel
these
like,
damn holidays will be here any second now.
And that. And we probably could use a break before we, you know, get back into the next season.
And we're working on what that lineup release is going to look like. I don't think they're going to tell us, you know, anything right now, but we are certainly at least, you know, sending that email. Hey,
yeah,
what do you think? Anything? Anything?
Give us a heads up.
Yeah,
give us a heads up.
Nothing yet. Nothing yet, but
All right. Well, good. Thanks, guys, for listening. Please hit that like and subscribe and do all that stuff. It means a lot to us. Doesn't cost you a thing, but it helps us quite a bit. So, all right. Thanks.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.